You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to Table Talk, a guide to the future of food and nutrition, brought to you by Food Matters Live. And this episode has been made in partnership with Sofion. Every episode features visionaries from across the food industry, digging deep into the latest innovations and the wild ideas that are going to change our world. Today's episode continues our series of conversations with the really big thinkers and disruptors in the industry. If you're interested in how the right software can lead to innovation, this is the episode for you, because we're going to find out how data can open your eyes to the problems you might have and what you can do to achieve success. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. My guest today is Norberto Chaklin. He's currently leading the Global Bakery Research and Development Team at Mondelez International. Mondelez are behind some of the most well-known brands in snacks: Oreo, Belvita, Ritz, and Cadbury's, just to name a few. So Norberto's team are dealing with hundreds of projects across the globe, and until now, they haven't had the tools to track and measure the success of all of these projects within one system. That's where Sofion come in with their software and expertise. And that's what Norberto is here to explain today. This should be fascinating. Hello there, Norberto. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
That's a great pleasure. Now, masses to ask, masses to get through. But before we get to that, let's start with a bit of a curveball. Just tell us, what makes you get out of bed at the weekend? What's your ideal downtime look like? And once the working week's done, where would we find you?
It starts with a good coffee. I drink a lot of coffee throughout the day. If I have all the time in the world, it probably starts with a trip to the supermarket and think about what I'm going to make for that day. My downtime is spent cooking.
Excellent. Me too. Me too. And I quite like shopping without a plan. I don't know about you, but I like just going, buying what looks great, getting home and going, what the heck am I going to do with this?
Exactly. That is it. That's it.
Yeah.
What do I build around it? Yeah. Find an interesting vegetable, and then what do I cook around this? And how do I impress everybody around the table?
Yeah. Man after my own heart. Now, we're going back to work for you, though. However, tell me all about Mondelez International and your role there. What's a typical work day for you?
A typical work day starts very early in the morning. I have a global job, so my team are in different parts of the world, including Singapore, China, the US, and Europe. So to span all the time horizons, I often start at 7 in the morning, some kind of global call with Europe and Asia. Then I take a bit of a break, breakfast, get the kids to school, and I usually get back on about 8:30, 9 o'clock. I used to drive to the office at that time. I will get back to that probably at some point. But right now, you know, I just come upstairs to my office and get back on phone calls. And the day is really a combination of discussions with different people on the teams, different business units about innovations and projects. Oftentimes, it's projects that aren't going well. And every once in a while, it's projects that are going really, really well. But also, you know, just fundamental things like regulation changes and, you know, supply chain disruptions. And how do we change products to meet different challenges that we face from a day-to-day basis? So it's really quite diverse. And, you know, on a very good day, we're also having a lot of talent discussions. I schedule coffee with team members sometimes just to keep up in a remote environment.
Just to drink more coffee?
Literally coffee. I'll ping somebody, hey, can we have a 30-minute coffee? And we could talk careers, we can talk projects, tell me anything you want to talk about. And then my day ends with a bit of a break for dinner. I usually start back at 9:30 in the evening on the phone with somebody in China. So that's my regular day.
It's a lot of work. So I mean, you're very much an executive baker, but just like a baker, you have to get up early in the morning to start work.
That's right. That's right. We are bakers. I love to bake, actually. So I think it kind of goes with the territory.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, you keep it going. You know what? If it's fun, it doesn't really bother you. I take enough breaks. I have enough flex. It's super fun. So
yeah, excellent. So can you tell me a bit about your background in research and product development? What brought you to your role at Mondelez now?
I'm a chemical engineer by training, mainly because my dad was. I realized quickly that that was the wrong degree to study, and I didn't want to be in the chemical industry. So out of luck, I ended up with an internship with Frito-Lay in Dallas, Texas to work on potato chips. And I thought, why would they need engineers? But I'll try it anyways. And I thought it'd be a temporary gig until I figured out what other degree to go get, an MBA or something like that. But, you know, a few years later, I was still there and I discovered this world of food. You know, it's like, wow, you can make a living making food and thinking about food and marketing food. And it was just super fun. So really, I've been through a 20-year journey in the food industry, learning one thing after the next, got an MBA along the way. And after about 18 years working for PepsiCo in various innovation roles, yeah, I kind of figured it's time to do something new. And Mondelez popped up. I was like, huh, why not go work on cookies and chocolate? so here I am. But it really is it's a passion for food, the food industry. It starts as a career, but at the end of the day, it's also it's a bit of a lifestyle and vision. You know, at the end of the day, I want to have an impact on food, food supply, food security. I think it starts with a company like ours, making our products better, more accessible, more fun. You know, I don't know where the road will lead me, but food industry it is.
Well, it seems that the road has led you back to chemical engineering. I would have said that baking, from my point of view, you know, because I like the nuts and bolts of it, is a sort of chemical engineering, isn't it?
You know, if you ask me, since we're talking about cooking, I actually love cooking more than baking. And the reason I love cooking more is because I don't like recipes. I like to just kind of invent and throw it together. The baking thing really became a passion the last year or so when I switched jobs. Took this job leading the bakery 6 months ago, actually. But I got an appreciation for the types of products that we make and the precision that's required to get them just right. So baking requires that precision. I would say that's out of character for me, but it is fun. So now the challenge is, what is the most complicated thing I can bake at home and make it just perfect? You know, it's a very different thing from cooking a spontaneous dish, but yeah,
absolutely. And so that's interesting that you've just moved to Mondelez. So this question is perfect for you. What makes Mondelez unique in its approach to research and development, in your view? What's different about Mondelez and what they do?
Let me give you my perspective on that. The company might look at it a different way, but I've been here about 3 years. So let me give you my newcomer's perspective. Mondelez it's gone through many changes, and it's a spinoff of Kraft, and it's acquired a bunch of things along the way. It very much has a new company mentality to it. It's a giant startup, if you will. I mean, it's massive, but not very old, which is kind of unique.
It's rare. It's a rare thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of strange, actually, because it's got the scale of what I was used to, but then sort of the agility that I wasn't used to. So I would say it's quite an agile environment, which makes it unique. I'm not sure that we always appreciate how agile we are, but compared to our peers, I think we are quite agile and quick in our decision making. Yet we have an amazing, huge portfolio of you know, billion-dollar brands. So it's quite an interesting balance. What makes us unique, I would say, is that with the past couple of years, we've adjusted our strategy to really manage our brands very close to the consumer. So we have a business unit model where the P&L is managed local and close to the consumers. Whether you have a global brand or a local brand, a brand that only exists in one country, the best way to grow that brand is to really understand how does it relate to the people in that market. And that might be very different in Vietnam than it is in India or than it is in the US. So you have some global things you have to think about when you have a brand like Oreo. There's also a lot of really important local things you have to think about. And putting the same emphasis on a huge brand like Oreo, as well as on a small brand that may only exist in that country. If you put the same emphasis on both, you're going to grow the entire business in that market. So that's the philosophy we have, which is fantastic. But it also makes it incredibly challenging, because as you can imagine, you end up, you know, I was used to a world where we had these global programs. You know, how do you invent this new beverage and scale it everywhere? Here we're in a world where we have, you know, very local projects that are very, very relevant to the local market. How do you do that more efficiently? It was really the challenge that we were struggling with. And that's kind of what's the premise of the software that we're about to talk about.
Just stepping away from the chat with Norberto for a moment, I want to mention that the focus on innovation continues here. We have all sorts of incredible speakers on new products at this year's Sustainable Food Futures webcast, which is on the 16th and 17th of November and will be available afterwards. For more information, please check out the website foodmatterslive.com. Okay, back to Norberto. Well, let's get specific here then. So let's talk about innovation. Why is innovation so important to Mondelez?
We have a growth aspiration, as most companies do. And growth comes from a couple of different places. But one place is the product that you sell today, you want to sell more of it, the exact same product, whether you have more penetration, you know, more channels, et cetera. But a good chunk of the growth also comes from innovating on your core business to bring novelty. You innovate for many different reasons. You might innovate to attract a new consumer, a younger consumer, a different consumer. You might innovate to be able to enter a new channel. If you think about e-commerce, the product format has to be a little bit different in e-commerce than it is in a supermarket. You also innovate for well-being, you know, consumers desiring products with less sugar or less fat or less sodium. That requires innovation. So our growth is going to come from growing our base and innovating on our base to reach new consumers and access new markets. We have a huge set of brands that are iconic. You've mentioned a couple of them, Oreo, Lou Biscuits, Cadbury Dairy Milk. Those brands, while they're massive, they have runway. They don't operate in all markets, and some markets are bigger than others. They're incredibly compelling to consumers. I mean, we work on these brands, so we have a lot of insight into how our consumers think about our brands. They're phenomenal, well-loved brands. So there's a lot of runway for these brands to continue to grow, and there's a lot of stretch and places for them to go. So that's where innovation comes in. Innovation is going to be the vehicle by which we can take these brands, continue to refresh them, make them relevant, and take them into new spaces and new markets. And good innovation does that in a way that is sustainable and highly incremental to your base business.
Okay. And how about getting to that innovation? What are the biggest challenges in trying to implement new innovations?
I think the first challenge is stop and think about what's the problem you're trying to solve. We come from a place where we did too much innovation and lots of small innovations. And, you know, all innovations have a place, but not all innovations are created equal and not equally relevant. So what is it that you're really solving with this new product or this change in the product? That's one. And the other one is, what are the criteria that you need to meet to ensure that that innovation is going to be successful? We have enough experience to know that certain things work better than others. And then the last one is, do we have the collective capacity to execute this innovation successfully in the market? The most brilliant innovation might fail simply because we didn't have the right resource allocated to take it to the last mile. You know, I can have the right R&D resource. I don't have the right manufacturing resource or the right sales resource. You know, it breaks down eventually. So great projects will fail simply because we don't have the right investment behind them to make them successful. I said those are couple of the ingredients that ensure that our innovation is successful.
So you have the ideas, but you need the entire network to work around it.
Yeah.
Okay, so can you tell me about your new innovation portfolio management project? How is it helping you to keep track of all the different global projects that this vast company is running?
Yeah. So I think the best way to answer that is to start with, what's the world we were running, 3 years ago when we started on this journey? The world was, at any given day, we have 2,000-3,000 projects running at any point in time in 14 different business units across hundreds of brands. We have finite resource to support all those projects, but I don't have a good way of knowing whether I have enough people to do project X in India. How do I know that? I barely know that the project exists, right? It's a manual process to know what projects exist and do I have the right people to do them? And I think the analogy that I thought of the other day was 50 years ago, if you flew an airplane, that was kind of an analog airplane with lots of dials and propellers and things like that. You had no idea of sort of knowing where this plane was going, unless you were in radio contact with various towers along the way. But you have all the bells and whistles to ensure that the plane stays in the air. Keeping it flying, keep the propellers running, and look at all the dials to make sure that nothing goes wrong and the thing keeps steady, that you have. But the communication and the information to know, hey, the weather changed 100 miles ahead, let me go this other direction. You couldn't do that without actually getting closer, talking to a tower and then changing course. And it's a very manual process. So if I fast forward today and I fly a brand new jet, one pilot could probably do that with one finger because he's just touching buttons. And not only is he keeping the plane in the air, he has full visibility of his destination. The plane automatically goes there. If all of a sudden someone says, you're not going to Paris, but you're going to Shanghai, he could push a few buttons and decide whether, does he have enough fuel? Is the wind the right direction? Are there any storms? And can I reach there? And he could just change course without really interacting with anybody. That's the journey we had to go through. So we started with all of these projects, but no idea how to manage them and no visibility whether we have even the right portfolio. Where we want to be and where we kind of are today in a way is I can pull a report that says, this is how many projects we have. This is how many we have in India. Of those projects in India, how many are in the last stage or in the first stage of development? What is my resource loading? Am I 100% able to deliver these things, or am I 50% oversubscribed, which means I don't have enough people to do it? And if I needed to make a change, I have some information to decide, what am I going to stop doing so that I can pull the resource on something else? That information to allow me to make changes on a 3,000 project portfolio, I simply didn't have. And I have that today.
That's an extraordinary change, isn't it? And it's about a massive level of context that goes around each project and being able to manage all those different aspects of it. So what are the really standout moments of this particular part of the innovation journey for you? How will you measure success?
Good question. So I would say much as with the cooking example, I'm motivated by the art and excitement of innovation. I wouldn't say I was someone who was, you know, intrinsically motivated by a tool or a system or a process or a database. But as you go through this journey, you realize that information is incredibly powerful. And we had partners that guided us along the way. When we started this thing, you know, 2 years ago, it was myself, a couple of cross-functional partners, and a spreadsheet. Eventually, we ran across this company, Sophion, who has done this with many, many other organizations successfully. And they really convinced us, you know, what is the data infrastructure that you need to do this successfully? So kudos to them for convincing us to do this. And they've certainly done a nice job with it. The aha for me is that, you're right, the simple but relevant data opens your eyes to problems you didn't know you had, issues you didn't know you had, issues you didn't know you had to solve. When you're flying blind, you simply don't know what problems you could run into. So I've gotten a huge appreciation for what data can do, even when it comes to innovation. And it's the data has nothing to do with the individual innovation projects. The data has to do with the collective bulk of projects and the impact that they have on our organization. So that would I would say that's the most dramatic insight. And a real specific example is as COVID hit last year, we weren't quite done with this project, but we were halfway through gathering the data and starting to build it in sort of a manual way. You know, obviously the supply chains were disrupted. Products wasn't getting to the shelf. Priorities had to shift. One of the things we realized was, you know, there was no room to do innovation because people weren't even going to the supermarket. Why would you put a new product out? I was incredibly blown away when the request came, could we use my, you know, half-baked database that wasn't quite ready yet to do an assessment of what our innovation portfolio looked like and whether we could, you know, cut 25% of the innovation portfolio to create capacity to deal with all of this COVID stuff. And, you know, I wouldn't say it was a perfect job, but yeah, this database, at least even in its infancy, allowed us to very publicly make decisions about we're going to cut this much innovation and we're going to redirect. And actually we could track whether that was actually happening, or, you know, a quarter later at the end of the year, did we in fact drop the innovations and did we in fact reset our baseline of projects that we were doing into the coming year? So the data is powerful and I'm blown away by what it can help you do.
It is extraordinary. Once you get information and you measure something, it's difficult to change unless you measure where you start from, I guess.
Right.
And that's where data is so vital. It, you know, I think people think it's a little bit boring at times, but without it, where are you going? You need to know where you are to start from to know where you're going. I just want to drop in to mention another recent edition of Table Talk, which is really relevant to the conversation today. Another one with Sophion, in fact. This time, it was talking about agile food innovation with Hain Celestial, all about how to start with the end in mind when you're thinking about starting something new. Both of those are in the extensive archive on the website. Check them out at foodmatterslive.com. And back to Norberto. Mondelez is an enormous company with people and products all over the globe. How does the scale of the company help or hinder your ability to achieve all these innovation goals?
Scale will always, I think, get in the way of having, you know, perfect data. Because, you know, even the data is never going to be perfect. A lot of it is models. So the scale gets in the way of having access to all of the data. A good system will allow you to maximize your opportunity to get data despite your scale. So that's the negative. On the positive, I think the scale affords you the reason or the need. It helps you justify the need. Because every blip in what we do, it has huge implications on our top line, on our growth, you know, algorithm when it comes to delivering innovation. So getting it right really has a big impact. Getting it wrong really creates a big gap in the innovation that we're projected to deliver in the subsequent year. So the scale allows you to justify why you need data and a good system. The scale does get in the way in how easy it is to pull that data together.
So let's think about what you're most proud of. So what are the challenges that maybe you didn't perhaps anticipate and overcoming them? What's the thing that really stands out?
First of all, I would say the U is it's a collective team. This was a cross-functional effort. I don't want to presume that this was my idea and my project from the beginning. But collectively, what I think stood out to me was the speed with which we went from capturing some data in a spreadsheet to convincing people that we really need to do this at a global scale, to approving a massive project with Sophion, to having it completely implemented within about 12 months, or the first phase implemented in about 12 months. And we're actually in phase two. So the speed with which we decided that this was critical, all the way to actually having it implemented. And today it is a system that's live. I push a button and all the whole portfolio is there. That was about 12 months. I think that's remarkable. And I think that the second bit would be people, even though I think we operate quite fast, people don't have patience. So The degree to which we were able to manage a lot of questions and projects and decisions even before the system was live by using a manual database is also remarkable to me. Once we decided we wanted it now. And we lived with a very manual database for about a year before we got to where we are now. And you know, it actually served us well.
So the big question really is, where next? Where's next on the innovation journey?
Good question. You know, going back to the fascination with data, once you're fascinated with data, you realize that more data can be dangerous, but there's a point to which more data is also going to be really, really good. So obviously, when you see that this really works, then the next question is, well, what else, what more information can I use to make our process even better? What we've accomplished today is an ability to manage our portfolio, understanding what's in the portfolio, what types of projects, how much revenue is driven by those types of projects, and does that match our ambition or our growth algorithm? That's what we've accomplished today. But I would say that delivers a goal of high-level management of an innovation portfolio across the company. The next phase would be, can I manage that portfolio better? Can I manage the projects better? So the piece we're doing now is, how do you automate the project management process for an individual project going through the portfolio? How do I build a resource model, not only for R&D, which is the resource that we put in, but also for functions further down the line? You often start with R&D when you think about innovation, because we're the first group that R&D and marketing are the first groups that touch innovation. But innovation doesn't land until supply chain, manufacturing, engineering, sales, everybody else comes on the table, right? So how do you start to build resource models for those other functions? Because as I said earlier, you know, you might think you have the resource to lead the project, but if the only resource you have is to lead the inception of the project, but not the resource to land the plane, that project isn't going to go anywhere. So having a resource model that looks at all other functions across the portfolio, that's the next phase. We've kicked that off, and hopefully in another year, we're in an even better place.
Fantastic. Okay. And just finally, what advice would you give to other companies that are contemplating a similar goal for their innovation?
Don't underestimate the power of data. And it might feel like you're flying the plane just fine, which is what we did. And of course, many of these companies, ourselves included, we have been flying this innovation plane for years, right? And it works. It's painful. It works. You don't realize what you don't know until you have the data to look at. So don't underestimate the power that information can give you and the efficiency that it brings in how you deploy your resource to make your innovation work harder for you. I think that's the big revelation. Don't underestimate it. It might you know, look like it will cost a bunch of money and take a bunch of time to get there. But the end of the road is really quite eye-opening.
Well, that's the exciting part about it, I guess. Well, thank you so much, Norberto Chaklin. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. This was a pleasure. It was really fun.
You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters Live. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from food security to editions with disruptors like Paul Shapiro. Recent highlights include editions on net zero targets and food health claims. Follow to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatterslive.com. Thank you so much for listening.